One of the mob's weapons of psychological warfare is humiliation and ritual public shaming. And I'm not just talking about social media cancel culture. I'm talking about literal public shaming in public. Wouldn't it be chilling if the exact same tactics used by the Red Guards during the psychological terror campaign of China's Maoist Cultural Revolution were being used today? Yes, it would. And yes, they are. During the Cultural Revolution, dissidents and opponents of the revolution were publicly humiliated and shamed in the streets by baying mobs of Marxist-Leninist agitators. At the time, these displays were known as struggle sessions. The goal was to use verbal and physical abuse to force the accused into expressing both physical and ideological fealty and ultimately confessing their thought crimes. So what were the characteristics of Maoist struggle sessions? The mob would subject the target to repeated rhythmic chants as a form of re-education. The mob would force the target to kneel, which is another form of ritual public shaming.
Tao to Chimamao.
No,
he's
really glad that he's no longer to be here. In honor of his legacy.
They ordered us to get down on our knees.
So if they see that a white person is getting on their knees, that shows solidarity for the situation. And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege? Just apologize.
Kowtow!
Here it is, right here. There you go. This is the white man. Get these white women.
They forced my parents to kneel.
No!
Kowtow to Chimamao.
The target was made to wear blackboards describing their alleged crimes and sins.
The highest ranking victims were brought out for public humiliation before mass meetings in a football stadium. They wore placards around their necks with their names crossed out like common criminals.
You want to get fucked up tonight? Would you still want the flag up? Don't look at me in my eyes! What's wrong with you, son?
We'd seen a lot of this in revolutionary films as we were growing up.
The target who professed their innocence, maybe by refusing to conform to groupthink and mob intimidation, was regarded by the Maoists as the most guilty.
Confess your crimes!
Nothing to confess.
I can remember as though it were yesterday watching a group of strongly built students, including some of my own classmates, boys who practiced martial arts.
Mao keep taught us they have to receive the re-education.
We demand you!
I really wanted to beat him because I felt such hatred. The past was still too close.
Look what they're doing, look at this. This is Marxism, cultural Marxism to a T. They create the unrest. And then they get upset when someone actually speaks up for themselves. And now they've ruined a peaceful evening. We had live music out here. They're ruining this evening just because someone actually spoke up for himself.
Only until Black Lives Matter, bitch!
Who said all lives matter?
This white woman.
The dude with the greasy ass hair.
Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Black lives matter.
The mob would be incited to target landowners who they were indoctrinated to believe were the architects of their oppression.
Those rounded up were made to write self-denunciations. They wore names on their backs. Capitalist. Landlord.
Wake up! Wake up, motherfucker, wake up! Wake up! Wake up, motherfucker, wake up!
Mao argued that the peasant violence was an inevitable response to landlord oppression. To redress past wrongs, it was necessary to go to extremes.
If you make supper good, whichever one it is, give up your house, give black people back their home. They're sitting there comfortably, comfortable as fuck, as if they didn't have death or by this neighborhood.
The mob would be incited to attack religious shrines.
Throughout the country, churches were closed, clergy unfrocked, religious symbols smashed.
Temples and shrines were ransacked. Despite official designation as cultural treasures,
the mob would be encouraged to erect their own murals and shrines to honor and ordain their ideological deities.
The statue of the Virgin Mary was replaced by a portrait of Mao. One form of worship gave way to another.
The goal of the mob was to rid the country of the old ideas by enacting reverse cultural imperialism.
There was to be a new revolution, a cultural revolution, a revolution in people's thinking.
All ideas contrary to Mao's thinking and the objects that represented them had to be destroyed.
Many irreplaceable objects were destroyed.
Instance, fall from grace.
Also statues of David and the like, the kind used in drawing classes. The rebels were full of themselves. They struck poses as they smashed everything.
Not just by attacking the ideas, but by physically attacking the people, buildings, and icons that represent those ideas and replacing them with their own.
Joan Lai's implicit distinction between smashing bourgeois ideas and smashing bourgeois individuals was quickly forgotten.
Those young Red Guard fighters go out on the streets. That is, the old ideas, old culture, old customs and old habits left over by the old society which spread feudal poison and symbolized imperialist aggression and capitalist exploitation.
And the people sinned a great sin, for they had made them a god of gold, and they bore him upon their shoulders and rejoiced, saying, "This be our god."
The mob would be incited to attack shops and businesses perceived not to be fully supporting their cause.
They're destroying old shop signs and replacing them with revolutionary ones.
There was a famous hair salon. It displayed photographs of all kinds of hairdos. When the Cultural Revolution came, they were seen as examples of bourgeois decadence. A group of Red Guards took over the place.
We own this building, that building, that building, this building, which are all destroyed.
The mob would be incited to target street signs and lobby for street names to be changed. In doing so, re-educating their class enemies to be ashamed of their heritage.
The scum and dregs, such as street names insulting the Chinese people left by imperialism and revisionism, must be completely destroyed.
There have been many campaigns across the country, from renaming Liverpool's Penny Lane.
We've got to recognise that our public realm, statues, squares, street names, don't accurately reflect our values or London in 2020.
They're putting up quotations from Chairman Mao Zedong. The Chinese people will go all out to establish the new ideas, new culture, new customs and new habits of the proletariat.
The mob would be incited to believe that looting and stealing is merely the just reappropriation of wealth.
We knew our home would be a target sooner or later. We fit the category.
父母都是资本家,
My parents had both been capitalists. Finally, one day, the Red Guards came charging in and turned our house upside down.
This is a business that my parents started 40 years ago, small, out of their garage. You didn't do anything to anybody. You know, why did we deserve it?
Former capitalists who had long since given up their assets. The local police asked the Minister of Public Security if the Red Guards should be stopped. No, that would be unwise.
Now, I'm not saying that the activities of BLM have reached anywhere near the level of terror dished out by the Red Guard. But I'm starting to notice some similarities. Victims of the Maoist Cultural Revolution were not just publicly shamed for their beliefs, they were executed for them. Of course, that would never happen in America, would it?
One person wearing a Patriot prayer hat was shot and killed in Portland last night.
He was a fucking Nazi! Our community held its own! And took out the trash!
Dissidents and thought criminals who refused to cave to the mob were also taken to re-education gulags. Of course, that would never happen in America, would it?
They also believed that their immediate responsibility would be to protect against what they called the counter-revolution. And they felt that this counter-revolution could best be guarded against by creating and establishing re-education centers in the Southwest. Where we would take all the people who needed to be re-educated into the new way of thinking and teach them how things were going to be. I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are die-hard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill 25 million people. I want you to imagine sitting in a room with 25 people, most of which have graduate degrees from Columbia and other well-known educational centers, and hear them figuring out the logistics for the elimination of 25 million people. And they were dead serious.
In 1984, George Orwell described the 2 minutes of hate, which was akin to public shaming training for the citizens of Airstrip 1. The rage that one felt was an abstract, undirected emotion, a shaming ritual which could be switched from one object to another like the flame of a blow lamp. Just as BLM agitators are able to switch their rage on a whim, from targeting a senator to a diner to an old woman, all seen as being born with original sin because of their skin colour. The object of ire could be anyone, writes James Panero. What matters is the display of denunciation and the pitiless scorn that must be arbitrarily shown. The impact of public shaming is also reflected in political polls. In the case of both Brexit and Donald Trump, the polls got it spectacularly wrong. Part of the reason for that was because voters were reluctant to tell pollsters their actual voting preference. Whatever the strength of their private beliefs, public shaming had made people ashamed of expressing support for Brexit or Trump. Expect that phenomenon to be repeated in 2020. Ritual public humiliation struggle sessions were happening in China right up until 1978, when reformist Deng Xiaoping abolished them. In Maoist China, without explicitly calling for political violence, the political class was nonetheless able to legitimize and incite it.
Even though the editorial neither mentioned the report nor praised violence, it was clear that the extreme actions of the Red Guards were not to be criticized.
In the United States, the political class has achieved the exact same thing. No explicit call for violence, but the subtle legitimization and incitement of the mob to carry out Maoist-style psychological warfare against the American people.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Go ahead, take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd! And you push back on them! And you tell them they're not welcome! Anymore, anywhere!
And now the same political class is using the threat of that same mob to intimidate Americans into voting them into power. History doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes.
It's absolutely crucial for you to help me fight the war on free speech by supporting me via Subscribestar, link in description, and also signing up for my free newsletter at summit.news/newsletter.
What happened to Matt Drudge? Did Drudge sell DrudgeReport.com? Or did he sell out his principles? That's a question that's been raging in conservative circles for months and was highlighted back in July by Tucker Carlson.
If you've seen the Drudge Report recently, you know that it has changed dramatically, 180 degrees. Matt Drudge is now firmly a man of the progressive left. At times, his site is indistinguishable from the Daily Beast or any other woke propaganda outlet posing as a news company. But the question remains, what happened to Matt Drudge?
Now, you think that with the tumultuous news cycle we've seen over the past few months, and the fact that this is presidential election season, Drudge's site traffic would be through the roof. No, it's actually cratered. In August 2019, Drudge was pulling in over 100 million readers. In August 2020, despite the news cycle being far more intense, he pulled in just 63 million readers. That's a 40% decline in the space of just 12 months. On one day last week, Drudge did 25 million views, when the website used to routinely top 35 to 40 million a day. As the True Pundit website notes, Drudge, even if he is still running the site himself at this point, remains uninterested in slowing the bleeding, and the site isn't just bleeding out, it's hemorrhaging. What's responsible for this catastrophic collapse in traffic? Well, the Drudge Report just isn't the Drudge Report anymore. And for that reason, he's lost a huge chunk of his loyal core audience, Trump supporters. After the execution of a Trump supporter in Portland by an Antifa extremist, Drudge chose to title the story with the headline, "Protesters, Trump Supporters Clash in Portland." Joseph Curl, who used to run the Drudge Report with Drudge, responded on Twitter, quote, "Drudge just wants more turmoil. Doesn't give a shit about America. Make bank, dude, but have some effing principles you once did." Many cited Drudge's prioritizing of the bottom line as an explanation for his support for Barack Obama in the 2008 presidential election. And despite what happened to the country in the aftermath of Obama's election, Drudge's traffic and ad revenue continued to explode. So if Drudge is only concerned about clicks and ad revenue, why is he presiding over an editorial stance that's responsible for a catastrophic collapse in clicks and ad revenue? I personally met Drudge years ago for dinner. He was very courteous and humble, but obviously fortified by his success and the courage of his convictions. Drudge is famously obsessed with privacy, and on the night he paid for everything in cash. So you'd think he'd be the one guy who would be up in arms about how coronavirus is being exploited by governments across the world to build a technocratic surveillance grid modeled on China's onerous social credit score. Track and trace, drone surveillance, medical martial law. That kind of statist hellscape would have enraged the famously libertarian Drudge that we knew and loved from a few years ago. And yet, in many ways, his website has become more hysterical and alarmist about COVID-19 than even the likes of CNN and MSNBC. Coronavirus lockdown laws are also the most blatant affront to libertarian principles in the modern era. So why would arch-libertarian Drudge vehemently support them? The Drudge Report is also now basically a megaphone for Trump's biggest critics. Every time a new anti-Trump grifter is about to publish a book, Drudge turns over half of his front page to them. Why? What happened? The question remains, is Drudge even running his own website anymore? Or did he sell it? Not according to a National Pulse interview with an individual called Kane, founder of competitor website Citizen Free Press. According to Kane, Drudge is still firmly in control of the Drudge Report.
This is going to upset a lot of people. Matt Drudge has not sold his website. I can confirm Matt Drudge is still running that site. So Matt is still involved with the site, and I won't get into the private reasons that I know, other than a well-known web conservative website operator got confirmation from Matt himself. I'll just say that, through email. But ultimately, you know, it's Drudge, and Drudge turned against Trump, and he supports, you know, Dementia Joe.
Kane also said that Drudge may have ingratiated himself so much with the mainstream media that he doesn't want to be ostracized by his new friends.
To a certain extent, Matt has developed a bunch, you know, a huge number of mainstream media friends over the last 20 years. And he's guilty of some virtue signaling.
Fearing the kind of establishment backlash that was experienced by all the prominent people who helped Trump sweep to victory in 2016, Roger Stone, General Flynn, Alex Jones, Julian Assange, did Drudge sell out? The real explanation may be somewhat more prosaic. Speculation is raging that there was a big fallout between Drudge and Trump's people. Apparently, Drudge used to enjoy regular access to the White House. Then one day he was told he wasn't needed anymore. Who delivered that message? Yeah, I've got my own suspicions. And I get why that could turn Drudge against the Trump administration. Given what Drudge did for Trump from 2015 onwards, that kind of treatment would anger anyone. But it doesn't explain why he seems to have jettisoned many of his core principles. This video isn't a personal attack on Matt Drudge. God knows he's provided millions of clicks to my articles over the years, and for that I'm truly grateful. Things may have happened behind the scenes that I don't know about, but it's fair to say that I'm one of the many millions of Drudge fans who feel disappointed and deflated by how the DrudgeReport.com is now barely distinguishable from CNN. In his legendary 1998 National Press Club speech, Drudge dreamed of an American press not beholden to corporate masters. And yet it appears that his website has become the exact thing that he once hated. When you're being defended by a far-left outlet like the Daily Beast and a Class A turncoat grifter like Oliver Darcy, something has gone drastically wrong. I sincerely hope that the White House extends an olive branch, an invitation to Drudge, so him and Trump can bury their differences. Whether that's at all likely seems like a long shot. It may be too late. Just like it may be too late for Matt Drudge to ever recover his core audience.
It's absolutely crucial for you to help me fight the war on free speech by supporting me via Subscribestar, link in description, and also signing up for my free newsletter at summit.news/newsletter.